Good morning. Our third case this morning is 2019-1028, 2019-1178, Kylie Bruins versus Marcus Green. For the appellant, Mr. Couric.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of the court. I'm Randy Couric. My co-counsel, Martha Rose, and I represent the appellant, Marcus Green. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The proposition of law in this case is simple and direct. The termination of a shared parenting plan and decree and subsequent modification of parental rights under E2 requires first a finding of change in circumstances under E1A. Both appellant and appellee rely on this court's decision in Fisher, and it's important to focus on the precise words in Fisher. Fisher held that a modification of the designation of residential parent and legal custodian requires a change. The reason that Fisher is so important is when you consider its analysis of the interplay between E1A and E2B, the same interplay exists in the case before you today. There appears to be confusion, and I think there's confusion for a very simple reason. When you have a shared parenting plan and a shared parenting decree, both parents are the residential parents and legal custodians. The statutes talk about modification, the statute talks about termination. I'm going to use the word that Chief Justice Moyer used in Fisher, change. We are changing the designation of residential parent and legal custodian. And in Fisher, Chief Justice Moyer said that if we are going to change the designation of the residential parent, there needs to be a change in circumstance. Again, the reason for the confusion, I think, is when you have a shared parenting plan, you have two residential parents and legal custodians. What happens when you change that plan? Whether you use the word modification, whether you use the word termination, you have one residential parent and legal custodian. You have gone from two to one.
But isn't it true that, I'm sorry, but isn't it true?
No, go ahead.
That when you are going to do such a modification, that what you're doing is you are terminating the shared parenting plan in order for a trial court to then designate a residential parent.
Correct. You are terminating the shared parenting plan, which is what happened in Fisher. Yes, the court used the word modification, but again, if you focus on the language which I just quoted, the court changed the designation. How else can you change other than terminate? It is not a term of the plan, which is the other important point in Fisher. And it's a critical distinction. In Fisher, the court made it clear that you do not have to have a change if we're modifying the term. Why do we not have to have a change? Because we're modifying the terms, because the terms can be relatively minor. I think the point made in Fisher, we may change a provision relating to holidays. You may change a provision relating to allocation of uncovered medical bills. We may even change child support. But we're making minor modifications to the terms of the plan. When we are changing the residential parent and legal custodian, we are changing the essence of the order. We are taking one parent and no longer allowing him or her to have the rights of a residential parent and legal custodian. Why do we require the change? It is the language that the court included in Fisher. We have the change to avoid the tug of war. We do not want to put children in a situation where they're constantly being forced to deal with parents who are litigating issues over and over again. And as the court pointed out in Fisher, if you do not have the change in circumstance requirement, then a parent can go in for any reason when they think the environment may be better. If the sole question is what is in the best interest of the child, a parent can go in and say, I moved, it's better now that we change the plan. Or the other parent remarried, and it's better that we change the plan. As a matter of public policy, we do not want to put children in that situation where we're constantly litigating those issues. The important thing, too, is to focus on the statutes, because that's ultimately what we're addressing. And what is critical in E1A is the wording that the court shall retain the residential parent designated by the prior shared parenting decree unless certain conditions are met. The language could not be any clearer.
But the language in E1A can be clear, but if we're talking about termination, it doesn't apply. So,
well, and the reason I believe it does apply.
In the language, I mean, if you want to talk about the plain language, it's, I mean, E2C seems very clear that it applies to terminations, and E1A applies to modifications.
Well, E1A says the following. The court shall retain the residential parent designated by the prior shared parenting decree, unless, how do you give meaning to that? The court shall retain, not the court may retain. The court shall retain the residential parent designated in the prior shared parenting decree. And then there are three other references to a shared parenting decree.
But so they're referenced in a shared parenting decree, and why one parent is designated is for school placement. So once a plan is terminated, and then they're designating residential parent, as Justice DeWine just read, that becomes controlling. But it's the termination that has to occur first.
The termination has to occur first if we are changing the residential parent and legal custodian. Correct. The termination has to occur first. But what E1A says, the court shall retain that parent designated in the shared parenting decree. That's the sentence I just referenced. The court shall retain the residential parent designated in the shared parenting decree. How can we possibly give meaning to that sentence and the three other references to a shared parenting decree if we say we're going to ignore it and we're simply going to rely on 2C? And frankly, you could make the same argument as it would relate to Fisher. In Fisher, B2 references, in addition to other provisions, you can modify a plan. Yet the court in Fisher said E1A applies. We don't just look at a vacuum and use 2B. The same argument applies here. We are not dealing with a situation where the courts should allow parties to go in on a whim to change something as significant as the residential parent and legal custodian. If we are talking about other terms of the plan, as the court indicated in Fisher, then yes, the other terms of the plan can be modified. The other thing that I think creates part of the concern or part of the confusion would be that there's a misconception about shared parenting. Shared parenting doesn't mean equal rights. Shared parenting doesn't mean that a certain parent has a certain amount of time. It doesn't mean that a parent has a certain amount of decision-making authority. The statutes are very general in terms of what you are required to do in a shared parenting plan. And what you are required to do is deal with the different issues that impact the child. But there is nothing in the shared parenting statute that require there to be anything equal, anything shared. So the question is, if shared parenting is by and large a label, and I will tell you, any domestic practitioner in our trial courts would tell you, shared parenting is a label. When we are dealing with parenting issues, we're dealing with decision-making, we are dealing with time allocation, and we're dealing with support. Those are the issues that we're addressing, whether it's a custody determination or whether it's a shared parenting determination. And in doing that, we can put whatever label we want on it. So the question is, if we're trying to avoid a tug of war, if we're trying to avoid ongoing litigation, why would we have a double standard? Why would we require parents who have custody to show a substantial change and the other factors under E1? Remember, you have to show a change in circumstance and meet one of the other three subsections. We have a very, very heavy burden if we're going to change residential parents and legal custodians. And it's for a very good reason, to protect children so they are not constantly in this tug of war. I would like to reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Emmett Robinson, and I'm here today on behalf of appellee Kaylee Paul, formerly Kaylee Bruns. First, I want to address a couple of points made by opposing counsel. And the first is the idea that there is some sort of confusion here that needs to be remedied. I don't think that's the case. I think that, respectfully, counsel's position inserts the confusion. You'll notice in his argument, he refers repeatedly to change. We're changing residential parent. We're changing the decree. Change is a tricky word there, because theoretically a modification could be a change, a termination could be a change, but change isn't the word that the statute uses. The statute says termination or modification, and it clearly delineates between the two. A counsel's position would have the court render E2C the provision that is specifically directed to termination of a shared parenting decree a nullity. There literally would be no situations in which that provision would apply. So I think we need to be careful with our terminology. If we follow the statute and the typical legal and everyday definitions of termination and modification, then we don't have an issue of clarity. We don't have an issue of conflict or confusion in the statute. Another point that counsel raised is the shall retain language in E1A. And I think Justice DeWine hit on this a little bit. That statute just doesn't apply here. When that statute applies, then yes, the shall language is imperative. Just like if a statute says that if you rob a bank, you shall be imprisoned for 5 years, that doesn't apply to this case. That doesn't affect the validity or the integrity of that statute. It just doesn't apply in these facts. So I think what we have here is a revised code provision that clearly provides that terminating a shared parenting decree doesn't require a finding of post-decree change in circumstances. Instead, E2C clearly says that at most the trial court has to find that the termination is in the best interest of the child. And it's undisputed that the trial court made that best interest determination here. Also on the undisputed front, it's undisputed that this case involves the termination of a shared parenting decree. And here again, we need to be careful with the language that we use, because the statute admittedly isn't a model of clarity, but I think if you examine it literally, if you examine it in everyday usage carefully, it is clear. But the statute makes a distinction between a decree and a plan. So E2B, which was at issue in Fisher, governs the modification of a plan only. E2C here governs the termination of a decree, which other sections make clear is composed of the decree itself and the plan. Moving on from that, I think everyone agrees here that this was the termination of a shared parenting decree. The trial court said as much on page 11 of its judgment entry. The Court of Appeals said as much. Paragraph 20 was emphatic that this is a termination case, not a modification case. And the appellant himself has repeatedly admitted it in his briefs, I think 9 and 13. And the court granted on a single issue. The single issue is what findings are necessary to affect, quote, the termination of a shared parenting plan and decree. So everyone agrees that this is a termination case. And the statute plainly says that when a termination of a shared parenting decree is at issue, only a finding of best interest is required. That really should be the end of the matter. But counsel instead wants the court to order the lower courts to stop applying the termination statute to terminations and to instead apply the modification statute. Apparently on the theory that modification somehow subsumes the termination provision. But I think that's contrary to the text for the reasons I've already said. The two terms have very different meanings. The legislature—
Counsel, let me ask you a question about if the decree allows for shared parenting and the plan is in place, and then there is a request, as is here, for a termination of that, the provisions of the decree, doesn't that necessarily mean that there was a change in circumstances? Because presumably the best interest of the child was met by the initial decree and the initial plan. So a change in that decree, I would think, would require some change of circumstances.
I think that's absolutely right, Chief Justice O'Connor. I think that the court said as much in Flickinger back in 1997, where it said that even minor changes, like the parents no longer getting along, coupled with the age of the child, can constitute a change in circumstances. So certainly, if both parents are moving for the termination of the groundwork of their agreement, that is a modification. A change in circumstances.
Okay.
So I think that even if there wasn't a formal finding, an explicit statement that there is a change of circumstances in this case, still the record in the trial court's judgment entry makes it clear that there was a change of circumstances.
Well, right. The trial court would have to, in a hearing, determine why now it's in the best interest of the child to terminate the shared parenting, which would necessitate testimony that is going to outline what the circumstances are with both mother and father and the child.
That's absolutely right. And here we had a 7-day hearing. In the judgment entry, the court found that as far as changed circumstances, that the appellant failed to comply with the terms of the shared parenting plan, that the decision-making process had broken down between the parties, that the appellant had exhibited, quote, inappropriate and aggressive behavior toward the mother, and that the child was starting school in the fall, which necessitated a major change to the plan. That was one of the changes that this court cited in Flickinger as sufficient to constitute a change in circumstances. Moving on then, I guess, it's also important to note, I think, that the statute elsewhere refers to modification or termination as a phrase. In D1D and then elsewhere in the revised code, 2151.42B. So the legislature knows how to refer to both concepts when it wants to in a single provision, but it's just clear that they didn't intend that here. And I want to address another point that was at least touched on by opposing counsel, and that is the concept that E1A could be rendered a partial nullity if the court were to apply E2C, which is the termination statute. I think the first answer to that is that appellant's approach would have E2C rendered an entire nullity. There would be no circumstances in which it would apply. The second answer is that E1A is not rendered a nullity. If it were the case that one or both parents went to the court and asked to change, to modify only the parental rights and responsibilities without touching the terms of the plan as a whole, then E1A would apply. But that's not what we have here. We have a request by both parents to terminate in its entirety the shared parenting decree, which G1D tells us, after it's enacted, encompasses both the fundamental decree allocating rights and responsibilities and the shared parenting plan as well. I think it's important to note that Fisher is informative here, because it tells us that there can never be a circumstance in which two subdivisions of 3109.04E apply. You can only apply one at a time. So counsel's suggestion that we can apply E2C and then apply E1A, in fact, flies in the face of Fisher, and it flies in the face of E2D, which is clear that upon termination of a shared parenting decree, the court must go about allocation of rights of, pardon me, must go about allocating parental rights and responsibilities as if it were starting from scratch and apply subdivisions A, B, and C. So the statute itself precludes applying both sections. Also, Fisher is clear that that case involved a termination. The Court of Appeals was very clear there. This court was clear in the terms of the question it granted on. And in Fisher, both parents had requested modification. And while the court terminated, while the court reallocated parental rights and responsibilities, it left in place the plan itself. That I think that's key there. It left in place the plan that allocated, you know, holiday time, school, that kind of thing. In our case, we have a complete termination. The court reallocated parental rights and responsibilities in their entirety. And it also explicitly, at page 11, I believe, of the judgment entry, terminated the shared parenting plan in its entirety. And it set forth a brand new system, reallocating holidays, weekends, child support payments, medical care, every detail. So we truly have a total replacement here. And I think that's a key distinction, that a termination, just by definition, involves the eradication or the total removal of what was in place previously. Modification, on the other hand, assumes that something was pre-existent and it continues to exist. It's only altered in some way. So if, for example, a party were to modify a contract, it's assumed that the contract still exists in one form or another. On the other hand, if you were to terminate the contract is completely eradicated. It's a non-entity. So I think that's an important distinction. I think the policy argument favors our position as well, because the revised code is clear that shared parenting is an inherently cooperative endeavor. Without at least some level of agreement from both parents, it simply can't function, it can't work. That's why the subdivision E2C might strike some as a bit counterintuitive at first. It's because it recognizes if the parents have come to the point where they have decided that the plan won't work, that the decree won't work, that all the court needs to do is to find that termination is in the best interests of the child. Because to use the tug of war analogy that the court discussed in Fisher, the not terminating the shared parenting decree in that circumstance would cause a constant battle between two parents who stand on equal footing and have equal rights as to the child. Rather, when parents are fighting in that kind of situation, it makes the best sense and is in the best interest of the child to do what the court did here and give those parental rights and responsibilities, which Fisher tells us is a term of art that means the primary legal and physical custody of the child to a single parent, and allow that parent the ability to make all of the major decisions for the child at that point. On the other hand, if the two parents come to the court and they don't want to get rid of the shared parenting plan, there's a lot of cooperation still going on, but they need an adjustment to the underlying decree. In other words, to the allocation of legal custody or residential parenthood, then E1A does apply, because that's only a modification. And the court needs to probe a little bit to find out, you know, what's going on there. Has the relationship between the parents deteriorated to the point that that this just isn't going to work, and we need to remake the system, or are the parents, has something actually changed in their circumstances that justifies this modification to this one section of shared parenting? With that, Your Honors, unless there are any other questions, I will yield and ask the court respectfully to affirm the 10th District. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. In regard to the arguments of counsel, I think, again, a couple of very critical points. Number one, the court can order shared parenting even if the parties don't both agree. Under the old joint custody statutes, yes, the parties had to agree. The courts can order shared parenting on the motion of one party. So it is not a situation where there has to be this level of cooperation that is suggested. Again, if the court would review the statute regarding shared parenting, it is very general. G says you have a plan that deals with how you handle your children and their issues. It doesn't deal with anything specific in terms of equal time, equal responsibility. There is a important distinction, again, that I don't think is clear. How do you modify shared parenting when you are talking about parental rights and responsibilities unless you terminate the parental rights and responsibilities of one of the parents? We are not talking about a term of the plan. We are talking about residential parent, legal custodian. How do we modify that? The only way we modify it is by terminating. What were the facts in Fisher? What are the facts in this case? Very simple. Both parents were residential parents and legal custodians. At the end, one parent was a residential parent and legal custodian. How do you reconcile that with E1 that says the court shall retain the residential parent? The court shall retain the residential parent designated in the shared parenting decree. If the court does what the court did in Fisher, they didn't retain the parent designated in the shared parenting decree. In this case, the court did not retain the parent designated in the shared parenting decree. So to suggest that you can give meaning to E1A and simply ignore those four references to a shared parenting decree, I think is disingenuous. In terms of how do we give meaning to C, I would agree. The statute is not well written. It is a piecemeal statute. It was began when there was nothing but sole custody. Then we had joint custody. Then we have shared parenting. And frankly, the legislature used wording that is not as precise as it should be. But could you give meaning to C and E1A? Yes. E1A requires a change, and then there are the three subsections that you need to meet as well. What C also says, in addition to, if it is in the best interest, you could also change the residential parent and legal custodian. You could terminate the plan. So I think there is a way to give meaning to C. Frankly, there's no way to give meaning to the language shall retain if you read C the way it is suggested by counsel for appellee. So submit to the court, there should not be a double standard. We have, since this case has been pending, based upon the statistics that this court keeps, there have been over 300,000 custody cases in Ohio. Why should those children who are subject to a shared parenting plan be subjected to the tug of war that we talk about in Fisher? Why should those children be subject to everything that goes on when parents are litigating? Why should, on a pure whim, I think it is now in the best interest of my children that I change the plan, should you be able to go back in and change the plan? You're inviting litigation at the back end if you say shared parenting requires nothing but what is in the best interest of the child. You are promoting litigation at the front end because you're saying to parents, litigate custody. When you're going through your divorce, when you're going through your parenting proceeding, litigate custody, because if you're the custodial parent, the other party will have a much harder time modifying it in the future. So why should we have a public policy in Ohio that promotes litigation? And I would submit to the court, the way you avoid that is by giving meaning to E1A and the very precise language that you shall retain the residential parents designated in the shared parenting decree. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.